Attention, patriots. Broadcasting from the Free Zones, Radio Free Redoubt begins in 5, 4, 3, 2...
Welcome to the Voice of the American Redoubt. This is episode 1906. Thank you guys for tuning in. I hope you had a super blessed week this week. And we've got a couple of special guests, two for one tonight. And so we're looking forward to that. We're going to try to get as absolutely squeeze as much time out of them as we can. Because it's a treat. And so I've just got a few stories that I want to cover in the news and commentary section. But, man, we've got a lot of stuff going on. A lot of stuff going on in our country. It was just so good to hear Trump, President Trump, take it to them in his State of the Union speech this week. It was just so encouraging. Hope you guys appreciated that as well. What a great thing. Trust me, you're going to look back on this time. You're going to miss these. You're going to refer this to this time when President Trump was president as the good old days one day. Mark my words. All right, because I've got a lot to look forward to, and I think a great discussion ahead of us. Let's get right down to it. The news and commentary is brought to you by the author, Glenn Tate, and the 299 Days book series with all 10 books out, including the audio books about the partial collapse and the rebuilding, overcoming adversity and building community in the 299 Days book series. Go to www.299days.com to learn more. Before I go on, I want to make a correction that a listener correctly pointed out last week when I covered the story from that Redoubt News covered. I had mentioned, the ranching industry praises the Department of Interior after agency reissues the Hammond Ranch's grazing permit to them. Why? Because they had to go to prison for arson, for burning some grass that got out of control. What the correct term would be, had to go back to prison. Of course, going to prison in the first place is an outrage in and of itself. But sending them back to prison for an additional 3 years? What was it? I have to look again. But anyway, they had to go back to prison to finish out an additional sentence, which is a violation of the Fifth Amendment or to be double jeopardy. Of course, they should not have gone to prison in the first place. But that was a good catch on that. Now, not because there were no protests or anything significant, rather, from them going to prison in the first place. It was when they had to go back to prison the second time for the same crime. That's when people got riled up. So anyway, good call on that. Okay, this week in Alerts USA, earlier in the week, they put out a notification of a Pentagon announcement, which President Trump talked about in his State of the Union address, but the deployment of an additional 3,750 U.S. soldiers to the U.S.-Mexican border to provide added support to DHS and Customs and ICE, Customs and Border Protection. The additions will bring the total number of active duty soldiers on the border to 4,350, which is more than a sevenfold increase in troop strength. Hallelujah. It's about time. That should have happened the day after he was inaugurated, in my opinion. The stated mission to this new deployment is to install an additional 150 miles of concertina wire and other barriers. They should be patrolling it, too, as well as provide other forms of support to Customs and Border Protection, including mobile surveillance and detection, aerial transportation for rapid reaction forces, hardening of ports to the ports of entry. Now, according to a statement by Homeland Security, Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen. Approximately 2,000 aliens have arrived in northern Mexico as part of a so-called caravan seeking to cross the southern border into Texas. Illegal entry will not be tolerated, and we stand ready to prevent it. The Department of Homeland Security has been working with the Department of State, Defense, and Justice to ensure all possible resources are available to address this lawless caravan. Boy, that's just, isn't that refreshing to hear DHS put out public statements like that under this administration? You wouldn't have heard that under the administration, under the previous president who will not be named, would you, ever? DHS will take all steps to ensure the safety and security of law enforcement personnel on the front lines. Such caravans are the result of Congress's inexcusable failure to fully fund a needed physical barrier and unwillingness to fix outdated laws that act as an enormous magnet for illegal aliens. That's just that's refreshing. So more troops to the border. Somebody, you know, as I've been talking about several sheriffs who have been drawing the hard line in the sand saying we will not enforce this unconstitutional, unlawful violation of the Second Amendment in Washington with I-1639. Now, more county governments, the commissioners, are looking to draft resolutions. And a listener points this out. A resolution is just one of the feel-good maneuvers that creates no legal obligation. Instead, he recommends, and I agree, file a civil rights complaint under Title 18, U.S. Code Section 242. It can even be initiated online. So there's the website for it, for our county commissioners or city council members, any elected official that might be listening right now, because I know there's many of you out there. There is a link that I'm going to take you to, justice.gov.crt, deprivation of rights under the color of law. Now, Section 242 reads this way, and this is under Title 18, which is criminal code, makes it a crime for a person acting under color of any law to willfully deprive a person of a right or privilege protected by the Constitution or the laws of the United States. Penalties can range up to the death penalty if such violations result in bodily harm, as in, say, a SWAT raid resulting in the death of the victim. So this might be an additional right. Now, I don't want to knock the county commissioners down for signing a resolution. I think that is the first step to show that you've shown you've taken reasonable measures. And there should be an escalation of this process. But I don't think you should stop with a resolution, but it is a great place to start. And we should encourage a resolution by our elected bodies, such as county commissioners and city councils, so that they can I believe this is a brush fire that can start and would hopefully embolden them. They're taking action against the state, and this is a first step. So it's good. We want to encourage them. But we also want to encourage them to be ready to go all the way, like some of these sheriffs are saying they're going to do, in defense of the citizens and their rights, which is the role of government, especially in Washington State, where that's how their constitution starts off. It clearly states that the purpose of government is to protect the rights of the citizens. Let's go to Redoubt News. Idaho caught sexualizing children. This is an article written by Alex Newman. You may know him as a prolific writer for the New American and the John Birch Society, patriots to the core, communist and leftist and other perverts and sicko watchdog, calling these people out. Health and welfare bureaucrats in Idaho, the heart of the American Redoubt. They're under fire from lawmakers and outraged citizens for, among other scandals, sexualizing school children in the state using federal previous president who will not be named era grants to circumvent state and local officials. The extremist sexual education programs include teaching children how to teaching children how to masturbate, encouraging fornication under the guise of abstinence, and helping children access services without their parents' consent from clinics run by abortion behemoth, Planned Parenthood, and other shady outfits. Lawmakers are now calling foul and working to rein in the abuse. Patriot heroine Representative Dorothy Moon, who serves on the Idaho House of Representatives Education Committee, blasted the bureaucrats involved and noted that those whole subversive operation appeared designed to fundamentally change America, quote unquote. The content, she says, is appalling enough to put a common person in prison for its dissemination. Wasn't apparently deemed inappropriate or offensive enough by the members of the taxpayer-funded department who promoted the program, Representative Moon told The New American in a statement. She says they were operating apparently under the auspices of a federal grant handed out during the previous president administration, who will not be named, under their administration. So, unreal. And fortunately, we've got some patriots that are fighting against this and calling these people out. And I'll tell you what, blasting them, I don't know what that means other than just words. These people need to be hung. They need to be arrested. They need to be hung, in my opinion. If I were king, but I'm not. But these perverts that come in under the guise of federal grants for education money to bring in their perversion, they should be dealt with in the most extreme way, in my opinion, if I were king. And I'm not. All right. RhinoPack.org. The Rhino Hunters of the Inland Northwest calling out Republicans in name only and calling out the leftist agenda have a subcategory on their website under rhinopack.org. That's RHINOPAC, rhinopack.org. Stark Raving Mad is the button up there on their website. You drop that down and it's their commentary on some of the most absurd news stories. I picked one out from this week. Mary Poppins, a racist. I saw this. I saw these headlines. Well, this just came out earlier, probably about 4 or 5 days ago. 6 days ago, wow, already. From New York City, not a big fat surprise. A professor, wouldn't you know it, Daniel Pollock Pelsner, has found the dancing scene in Mary Poppins featuring Julie Andrews and Dick Van Dyke on a London rooftop to be, wait for it, racist. The offensive part of this much-beloved scene is that all of the participating characters were in quote-unquote blackface. Actually, of course, blackface is where folks purposefully mimic dark-complexioned individuals, usually Africans, by deliberately altering their features with makeup. That's called blackface. Doing blackface is a huge, unpardonable sin, I guess, recently in our culture. In Mary Poppins, the film's characters were portraying chimney sweeps in an occupation, not a race. And the makeup is to mimic soot, not complexion. Chimney sweep, then and now, is an honorable occupation where workers actually encounter dirt. Dirt is clearly something far beyond the experience of the pointy-headed professor. Soot, in particular, is something he has probably never even seen. Obviously, to him, who has never had to wash his hands, the only reason for someone's face to be covered in soot is to belittle Africans. Good grief. There's that and many other stories over at Stark Raving Mad, pointing out the left and their irrational behavior under their Stark Raving Mad section of rhinopack.org. Now, if you guys haven't had a chance to, please do go to libertystate.org and weigh in. Take the poll to find out. Let us know what you think should be the official state rifle. Of course, I love the old Western lever action. The West was won on the Model 94 lever action Winchester rifle, right? And it's actually it's getting quite a few votes. But for me personally, I think it should be a battle rifle. And those are coming on very strong. There's several to choose from among not the least of what. Well, there's nine of them. We've got the M84 Barrett 50 caliber. We got the M14/M1A, the AR-15, the M1 Garand, A TAR-21 Israeli-made bullpup assault rifle is also in the list. A 10/22 rifle, American classic. The Model 94 lever-action rifle, and the Mini 14, and the 308 version of the AR-15, known as the AR-10. Heavy hitter, same caliber as your M14 or M1A. So, yeah, you've got 9 rifles to choose from. So make your vote heard. That's pretty much it. See, I've got something. You know, somebody sent me, thank you, God bless you, for a link to a list of military, from the military leader, a reading list for military leaders. And I looked through that, and I actually have several of those books recommended on the list, but I thought of a couple I could add. And so I want to sit down and go over that again and think carefully. There's a few other books that I definitely think could even be added to the list. I might even put up a posting this week for that and link to it. But thank you for sending that in. That was very cool. And he also says, God bless, John, and it's been good hearing you on board with Matt on Patriot Radio lately. Thank you. That's been a lot of fun. If you guys weren't aware of that, you can go over to Patriot on Podbean. You go to Patriot Radio, and I've been with Matt probably about 3 of the last 4 shows on Patriot Radio, helping him out with that and sitting in. So that's been really cool. We haven't been able to do that in quite a while. It's always good to be on the air with Representative Matt Shea as well. But that's those archives are over at patriotradio.podbean.com. And I'm sure I'll be doing more of that in the coming weeks, as his schedule's been so hectic being in session right now. Okay, with that, let's take a break. And we come back and bring on our special guests, 2 for the price of 1. So we're looking forward to that. Stay right there. This is Radio Free Redoubt.
Hey, Liberty State supporters, this is Lady Liberty reminding you that our 51-2A rally is happening this week on Friday the 15th at the Capitol Building in Olympia, where we have joined forces with the Second Amendment supporters to tell our legislature that we want them to divide the state so we can restore our power of the vote in Eastern Washington. Do a quick search on Facebook for the 51-2A rally and post your support and comments where people are organizing carpools, caravans, and running buses to get to the 51-2A rally. We want to be heard loud and clear by every representative and senator in Olympia, and masses of people showing up are what does that. Again, it is this Friday, February 15th, from 11 to 2 p.m., so do what you have to do to get there, and together with the Second Amendment supporters, we will tell them loud and clear, we are Liberty State. Bring your friends. Also bring your Liberty State flags and wave them proudly. God bless all of you, and God bless Liberty State. I look forward to seeing you all there.
One podcast dares to be different.
Welcome back. This is the Voice of the American Redoubt. This is segment 2, and segment 2 is brought to you by our good friends up there in the northern part of the panhandle of Idaho, Selkirk Mountain Real Estate, helping God-fearing, liberty-loving patriots just like you get strategically relocated to the heart of the American Redoubt. And if that's where you are looking to relocate, then give them a call, SelkirkMountainRealEstate.com, and they'll help you out there. And also, don't forget our friend over there at Gem State Patriot, a great publication that covers a lot of issues, especially in Idaho, the Gem State, has that offshoot website documenting the spread of socialism in America. And he's got the new website, socialismtoday.info. So arm yourself with information so that you can inform your friends, and you can stand toe-to-toe with the commies that are trying to tell you that their way is better because all the other people that tried communism failed because they didn't try hard enough. And they didn't do it right, but this time they're going to do it right. Well, they're lies. And so you need to be armed with truth. Okay, it is a pleasure to bring for our news and commentary sponsor, Glenn Tate, the author that many of you guys are already familiar with, and his relatively new bride, Shelby Gallagher, also author, dystopian novels. We're going to talk to both of them today. We got them on the line. We're going to talk about their books and some of the projects that they're working on and some events that we got coming up, and especially want to get their take on where we are today, kind of get a pulse on America, how divided we are, how that lines up with some of their ideas about this the fictional collapse of our, you know, socio-political economic system, and maybe how close we are to that today as things continue to unravel. So, Glenn, thank you so much for being with us on Radio Free Redoubt.
Well, thanks for having me. This is great. Always fun. And it's really cool to be on your show with my wife, Shelby. It's just a fantastic thing. This is what we do. This is like couples fun night for us. You know what I mean? This is great. So we get on awesome podcasts and have a good time.
Absolutely. And so, well, this brings me to Shelby. Thank you so much for being on Radio Free Redoubt again.
Thank you so much for having me. And just, you guys keep saying good things about me, I'll just sit here and listen. This is awesome.
Good. Well, we're not going to let you listen too long. We want your input on a couple of these things. So, but it's really great to have both of you with us. So let's start off for our new listeners. Glenn Tate, the author of what? Now, we already talked about that in segment one, 299 Days book series. But talk briefly about that. Just kind of what's the setting? What's the timeline look like? And what's the overall, I guess, the theme of the book that you're trying to convey to the readers?
You bet. Yeah, the setting is Olympia, Washington, although there are dispatches and reports from other places in the country, but it primarily takes place in Olympia, where I used to live. Now Shelby and I live in a rural part of Western Washington where we're around like-minded people, and it's just awesome. But the setting is my life story, the first book, and it's me being this prepper suburban guy, lawyer, who's trying to prep and getting a lot of resistance domestically, and that's based on my ex-wife, and just trying to prep and get it done. And there's a partial collapse. There's political turmoil, economic turmoil, and it's a combination of things. It's political, economic, and then all kinds of other little things. There's a war in the Middle East. There's a Chinese grid attack, but these are all sort of amplifiers to the malaise that's going on. And it's the Detroitification of America is how I describe it. And you just take Detroit now and project out, you know, a few more years, and that's kind of what it looks like. The setting is the current times. I'm not going to predict when stuff happens because that's really hard to do, and you lose credibility with people. So I'm done predicting the timeline. And it's about me and my real life team of guys who are real guys. You've met some of them, for goodness sakes. And it's neat to see Pow. Everybody loves Pow, the 6-foot Korean gunfighter who sells insurance. And that's exactly what he is. And so we get together, we go out to my real life cabin, which is in a kind of rural part of Olympia, outside of Olympia, and rally up the community. One of the messages is how important community is. You can't do this on your own. If you're going to be that lone wolf, they'll find your body, you know, in the spring thaw kind of thing. It's just going to not go well for you. So build up the community. I had a lot of influence. I've never been in the military or anything like that. I have a lot of friends, including the real Special Forces Ted, who's a real guy who trained my team guys. And it's about how Special Forces principles, unconventional warfare, hearts and minds, building up the community and having political support and logistical support. The Green Berets show up, and there's a brief war. The government is trying to hold on to power in the Seattle area. By the way, it varies regionally and by state. Everybody has their own circumstance. Washington State has Seattle being bad, Seattle and Olympia, and the rest of the state being relatively well off, and the folks in the rest of the state go and march and basically take Olympia, and then there's that aspect to it. There's a lot of characters, a lot of human stories, and when I say human stories, I don't mean the Oprah Channel, you know, cry in your hanky kind of human stories, or like a dog travels 600 miles to reunite with its owner kind of human story. I'm talking about real people doing real things, people deciding if they're going to fight for good guys, if they're going to sit it out, if they're going to be bad guys. all kinds of people showing examples of normalcy bias and people not treating people properly, people treating people maybe better than they should, and others take advantage of them, all those sorts of things you're going to run into when this all happens. And then there's a big fight, as I mentioned, and the state of Washington minus Seattle reconstitutes itself as the state of New Washington. And there's Book 10, of course, 43 colonels, and there are 43 people who are recognized by the legislature of New Washington. It's really kind of Liberty State. That term wasn't around when I wrote these books a few years ago, but it's pretty much Liberty State. Liberty kind of included the good parts of rural Western Washington. And one of the colonels who's recognized for the amazing things he did is Colonel John Jacob Schmidt in Radio Free Redoubt. I mean, what I foresee you doing in the future about getting good news out to people that need it and being that beacon, that Radio Free Europe and that sort of model.
Sure.
I write about in the books. And that, in a nutshell, is 4,000 pages boiled down to a little under 4 minutes.
Yeah, well done. There is a lot to that. It's really positively impacted a lot of people and really made them think about their own preparedness and preparations. And, you know, great job on that. And it's a pleasure to be able to promote that, because the life stories there's something in there that speaks to everyone. Everyone can identify with a character that's like, that's me, you know. So, yeah, well done on that. And it's really exciting. So all 10 books out, including the audio books now, those have you know, been really successful. And we're talking about preparedness, you know. So now this week, as we're talking, I guess more snow is hitting your area. This is kind of not unprecedented, but very rare gridlock that's taking place over there on the west side with this cold front coming down. Of course, we're getting slammed with snow all across the American Redoubt, but this is, we're talking the greater Puget Sound area, Western Washington, the Olympic Peninsula. They're in gridlock right now. So how are you guys doing with that?
Well, I'll jump in here, JDS. We're doing great. We have everything we need at this point, and what you just said, that we cannot, we are locked in onto our property. We can't leave at this point because we have a lot of snow. And you just brought up a good point. What we actually like about moments like this, when we're kind of stuck inside and stuck at home, it kind of gives you a good kind of dry run on your preps.
Yes.
And I think what's come out with this one is, first of all, we're covered on food. We're covered on all of that. But one thing we came into kind of this winter season with power supplies, power banks, propane, water, making sure that if the well goes dry or, you know, it freezes or whatever, we have a secondary water source. So a couple of tweaks that we've made, a couple of things that we're like, we need to work on that when it warms up a little bit, but doing well. And I encourage people, when you have those power outages, when you have that extreme weather, use it as a piece of this to try out what you got and make sure it works and you know where it's at and you know how to plug it in and use it and try it out. Use it to test your systems.
Yeah, absolutely. And now over there, you know, because in our minds, we're like, well, we see 4 to 6 inches of snow, you know, a day for several days at a time. But we're talking about an area that doesn't normally see that. So your public services, your local government, they're not equipped for it. I mean, it's easy to make fun of, you know, those guys. They freak out when they see a half an inch of snow. But, you know, you've got like, what, 4 snowplows for 4 counties to share. You know, it's not that bad. But I mean, you just don't have the support, the infrastructure in place. It's not something where they put in their budgets for a major snow removal budget, because it's just not something you normally see there. So when it does come, it does really impact you. And I know it's super wet snow, so it compacts down. So it's like you can't get traction on it because it just becomes hard packed. Still, it's a great opportunity. Now, I saw pictures of store shelves wiped out around the across Western Washington. Is that what you guys saw where you were?
Yeah, that's interesting. I'm glad you brought that up, because we live in rural Western Washington. We don't live near one of the big urban cities, you know, Olympia or Seattle or anything like that. And that's where a lot of those pictures are coming out of. I will say this. I stopped at the grocery store on Friday to pick up just a couple of, I didn't have to. It was just a convenience thing, and pick up some extra eggs because we knew this was coming. And there were people there. It was busy, but not insanity. It was like a busy Saturday morning at the grocery store. It wasn't like panic. It wasn't, oh my gosh. And the store shelves were, I would say, depleted. They were not empty. They were picked over. And it was like a sale had just happened. And people were like, hey, grabbing a cup of coffee and a donut at the bakery and relaxed. The atmosphere was relaxed, but kind of like me, where it's like, hey, let's just pick them up because it could be a few more days before you come back. And I think that's the difference between rural communities and city life, is that people in rural communities, just to go to the grocery store, is about a half an hour, sometimes 40-minute drive just to get there and back because it's a distance.
Right.
But people in general have a kind of a basic preparedness, just having stuff on hand because you can't just run to the store conveniently.
Yeah.
And so it was, as someone who's lived in the city for a long time, it was refreshing to see, and it was nice because when the weather did hit, people got home and people were safe. And I do want to speak to the other thing. I have been watching our local governments try to operate in this, and it is difficult. When you have, someone having some sort of a medical emergency, roads are not plowed. Secondary and third level roads are not plowed. And they are having a hard time navigating those roads, getting emergency vehicles there, getting people out of homes, out of the structures, into emergency vehicles and back. So, when it's like this, we look at it like we need to take care of ourselves. And that's someone, is having a real medical emergency. We have to take care of ourselves.
Yes.
Those guys are doing their doggondest. And God bless them. Seriously. It's a hard work right now to respond. And it's probably about three times the response time right now.
Excellent. Well, good job. And you're right. That is a very distinct line between rural and urban, even politically.
Mm-hmm.
It really does come down to urban versus rural. And let's talk about, since we got you on right now, let's talk about your book a little bit, your setting and what you kind of anticipated as how you envision things coming unraveled socio-politically, economically, that kind of drove the story and the characters in your book. Books, plural.
Books, yes. We're plural, and we're about to get the third one out. Yeah, there's two things that really kind of got me to write in the first place, and I started writing my series a couple years ago, was the watching, at the time I lived in Portland, Oregon, and watching Antifa bloom up during the results of the 2016 election, and watching pretty violent riots begin and be allowed to continue, and the local police force letting that happen and not squelching it quickly, and this whole resist movement starting, and the governor of Oregon starting her whole resist movement and getting California and Washington to join in and have buy into that. And
yeah.
And I just remember thinking, this is not going to be good. And seeing that happen, and at the same time, prepping and wondering, when do I bug out of this? Because when you have this kind of violence happening, so you've got to think about when do you bug out? And I don't know the answer to that.
Right.
But at the time, what happened was, is I did have at my disposal, available to me, a family cabin in Colorado that I was able to bug out to, except it had just been sold at that time. And imagine all you preppers out there, your bug out location suddenly being gone.
Vanishes.
In the midst of having to ask, when do we bug out? And so that's what prompted me to start writing. And then on the flip side, too, as I watch, especially the state of Oregon, where this all takes place, I'm watching the government just woo single moms and market them and entice them into government-subsidized programs, food stamps, wage program, subsidized housing, all of those things. And they're there to help you. And it starts even in the hospital room when you give birth. They're handing you the brochures. They're giving you the vouchers. They're giving you the phone numbers and websites to go sign up. And And I just remember thinking, man, when this all falls apart, that population, single moms with small children, are going to be hit the worst, because that's where, that's a very fragile population. That's women and children.
Well, you have the poorest and most vulnerable part of your culture dependent on the government, and the ones that, just like, you know, in Venezuela and, you know, several other countries that we've seen, when the government, you know, becomes unable to meet those needs, you get a serious problem. And, of course, you know, we've seen that. Well, we could talk about that a little bit also when we come back from the break. And also, I want to get you guys' take, since we're talking about this. We're seeing a sharp divide happen in our country right now.
Yeah.
More and more openly calling for violence, even against what they call Trump supporters. But anyone that does not support a globalist, you know, anti-Christian left, or, you know, anyone who does not adopt or embrace this new social order, this new world order of leftist, communist, anti-American doctrine, you're an enemy, and something needs to be done about you. So we're seeing our country really getting torn asunder. So I want to talk about that, maybe how it lines up with you guys' stories, with what we are seeing in our own country today in the headlines, not fiction. And then we got some events coming up, too, to help people answer those questions. How do I prepare? And so we'll talk about that when we come back. So we are with authors Glenn Tate and Shelby Gallagher here at Radio Free Redoubt. We'll be back in just a moment, so don't go too far away.
Socialists seem to believe that people should be numbers in a state computer. We believe they should be individuals. We're all unequal. No one, thank heavens, is quite like anyone else, however much the socialists may pretend otherwise. And we believe that everyone has the right to be unequal. But to us, every human being is equally important. A man's right to work as he will, to spend what he earns, to own property, to have the state as servant and not as master, they are the essence of a free economy. And on that freedom, all our other freedoms depend.
There is an exodus happening in America today, from cities full of crime and corruption to the rural areas of clean and sustainable living. Like-minded patriots are coming to North Idaho in search of a simpler, self-reliant lifestyle. I'm Chris Walsh, broker and owner of Revolutionary Realty, based in the heart of America's great redoubt, North Idaho. Sometimes God puts you somewhere for a special reason. For me, I believe it's to help like-minded patriots find safety and security for their loved ones. At Revolutionary Realty, we educate buyers about solar power, growing food, obtaining water, and personal security. I became a realtor in 2008 at the bottom of the real estate market, but not the top. I believe that there is a grand plan and that I'm just a part of it. My job is to help people discover and relocate to America's great redoubt. Call a revolutionary today at 208-667-1776 or visit us at revrealty.us to learn more. That's www.revrealty.us, and God bless you.
It looks good, kill me. Without frontiers, war without tears, games without frontiers, war without tears.
All right, welcome back. This is segment three of The Voice of the American Redoubt. Segment three is brought to you by Strategic Landscape Design, designs to help keep you safe and to help you thrive on your property when it comes to securing your water rights, for defensibility, for food production, and they have also added a new service They are traveling outside of the American Redoubt. Anywhere you are, if you already have property and you would like some professional assistance with that, or if you have, if you're looking at property, maybe you're trying to compare a couple different options for property and you need some help making up your mind, that's another service that they offer, and they do travel as well. So they have strategic landscape design, helping you with key online data. They've got decades of experience to provide recommendations that you can use to make informed decisions. So check them out at strategiclandscapedesign.com. Okay, now we are continuing on this segment with our special guests and friends, authors Glenn Tate and Shelby Gallagher. And we left off talking about the sharp divide that we're seeing in our country. We want to talk about several things here. What we're seeing today with this sharp divide, a lot of talk about the coming civil war. And you're hearing this from left people on the left and on the right, concerned about where this might be headed. So when the masses and mainstream media is even saying, could we be headed toward a civil war? It might be something worth sitting up and paying close attention to. What can we do about that? We'll be talking about some events coming up to answer that question, how you can prepare for any challenging time, whether it's a storm like what they're going through right now over there on western, on the west side of Washington State, or whether it's a total societal, economic, political collapse in our own country, God forbid, should that happen. So Glenn and Shelby, thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
Okay, let's talk about this. You guys are obviously very astute. You're paying attention to the headlines. You're seeing a lot of stuff that was that you've added into fictional storylines in your books actually make headlines now. And does this concern you? Do you think this is drawing us closer to the fictional story becoming reality?
In here, this is Shelby. Yeah, I'm too. And I have to say, it is eerie when I write a fiction book about this. I think back to a year and a half ago, and you sit here at a typewriter, and you think, let me just take this idea and fictionalize it, and like take it to the worst, to the most kind of fictionalized worst case scenario, because you're writing fiction. And then here we are a year and a half later. I didn't mean for this to actually happen. This was actually just supposed to be fiction. So, So I see coming up soon, and it seems to be getting some gas put on it because people are saying inflammatory things. But I see us breaking apart demographically, not east and west, north and south. I see this as what we were just talking, rural and suburban. And once you've been in one place and you visit another, there is such a mindset difference between really fundamental issues, Second Amendment rights, free speech rights, property rights.
Or worse,
personal
coercion.
Exactly. All of
to
those,
take those rights, yeah.
All of those things. So I see it being almost a and I see people moving. I see people who are conservative living in cities just exiting the cities. I see people who live in rural communities who hate where they're living going to cities. So I think people are moving with their feet and they're speaking up about it. So I think there could be a civil. I really hope there's no violence. I'm going to be really honest with you. Hope there's no violence. But I think people are angry enough, and they've on both sides, that feel like they've had their rights trodden on so much. I think this is going to be violence more than we've seen now. And I'll let Glenn jump in there too. I don't know what's going to cause it, but we just know this, when wars start, it's over that something really silly, like someone shooting that first rifle because they misunderstood something, or
right.
And all of a sudden it just unleashes. So,
well, let's
I think it's
hope
really
not.
That
it's, yeah, your audio's real garbled, so I don't know what
okay.
Glenn's is coming through real clear, and yours is kind of fading in and out there, but I definitely got the gist of what you're saying, and that came through very clear, the point that you're making. Gosh, there was something I was going to add to that. Oh, what I was it brought me back to the question you were asking, rhetorically, when do I bug out? When do you bug out? And one of the answers to that is strategically, voting with your feet, so that you can move on your own terms, so that you are a relocatee instead of a refugee. That's when you bug out, before you have to. So
that is so true. And so I think you might remember at the Sandpoint Preparedness Expo last fall, I said to the room, how many of you have moved here in the last 2 years from California? A lot of people raised their hand, and I said, did you move or did you bug out?
Right.
Right?
Yeah, so true. And that's what you guys have done. Mm-hmm. You've strategically relocated yourselves. You're still on the west side. You're still in occupied territory, but you move into a less hostile territory. And you did. You strategically got out of urban areas and moved into a rural area, much more friendly. You probably see a lot more NRA stickers and Trump stickers and, you know, other kind of evil yep. propaganda like that, paraphernalia like that. So, mm-hmm. Glenn, what's your take on where we're at today? The divide. I know that you're looking at things from a more of a political, legal standpoint. You've got a pretty good vantage point as well as far as where some of these hot spots are popping up politically and socially speaking.
Yeah, we witnessed history last week. I think when the history books are written, this will get a paragraph in the history books. When President Trump in the State of the Union address said, America will never be a socialist country, that is enormous. Not just that somebody said it, but the fact that he had to say it is
yes.
my point. Nobody in the past, all the polite politicians, and this includes Republicans who have been too nice in the past, no one's ever said those sorts of things because they've never had to. The country has always had this basic understanding the Democrats will spend some more money and do some more socially liberal stuff, and the Republicans won't, but we're, you know, it's still America and everything.
Right.
When you have to say that we won't be a socialist country, that means the line has been drawn and that there is a line, and then there's one side on one side of the line and there's another side on the other side of the line. And not only, you know, did he have to say it, but he had the courage to say it, which I appreciate. And this is going to be, and I can see from my political background and everyone else could see this too. There's no magic insight on this. That speech was the 2020 reelection campaign. And we saw they called it the opening argument. I thought that was a good, like, legal term for the 2020 reelection.
Yep.
Now, I'm not going to get in partisan politics. Really don't care on a lot of levels. But I do care about this. The issue in the United States is whether we're going to be a socialist country or not.
Yeah.
And that is all the evidence you need of a divide. And it clearly, that is the line, that word socialism is the issue. And we're going to look back and say, oh my goodness, this is when it started. And of course, the other side's going to do all kinds of bad things and try to take it to socialism. You know, we all watch that too. By the way, a lot of people listening probably have quit watching State of the Union addresses. I don't blame them. I find them pretty boring too, and I haven't watched one in about 5 years, but I did watch this one.
So did I.
And it was so amazing when the president said, this isn't going to be a socialist country, and the Democrats were scowling. They looked mad, like, what are you
yes.
talking about? You can't say that.
They're sitting there with their arms crossed, shaking their heads, glaring. And that's the response. Now, we have had this type of language before, but it was when Reagan was talking about communism, which was way over there, right? And, you know, the era of
exactly.
Red Dawn, that when we grew up, you know, it was this communist Russians, Soviet Union, and we're over here and we're America. But now the enemy is within. It is infiltrated all of our institutions, from the government to education to academia to media. Our entertainment industry, all of it what you said was the fact that he had to say, and it raises the question, are we going to be a socialist country or not? And it really is telling of how far we've gone from, are we going to be a republic or not? We're not even asking the question any longer, are we going to be a republic or not? We're asking now, are we going to be socialist or not? That's alarming.
Yeah, and that'll be the defining the battle line. I think there'll be a couple Americas. I can't see this gigantic country staying intact when you've got these two opposing forces, and one of the opposing forces has a whole lot of guns, and the other opposing force has a whole lot of money and political power and, you know,
propaganda
depending on them. You know, this doesn't turn out well, and so I think they're going to be socialist areas. There already are. That's the crazy thing.
Sure.
We've already got Chicago. We've already got New Europe, by the way. Thank you for coining that phrase. I use that all the time. Formerly known as New England. And you've got the West Coast, especially California and Oregon. And so we've already got pretty much socialism. It's just it's which side is going to make their vision nationwide. You know, is freedom going to be the nationwide vision or is socialism? And I don't think the nationwide reach is possible because we are so divided. So we'll have these different areas, and maybe there's a legal formality where Chicago or most of northern Illinois becomes some kind of its own state or something. I don't know, because I think in a lot of ways, when it gets down to that, whether Illinois is part of the United States or whether it isn't, doesn't matter. I mean, it only matters to map makers if they're going to use different colors to color in the boundaries of different places.
Right.
It's going to be ugly like that, and I hope, like Shelby said, that it's not violent, but I really don't see a way around it. When you've got an enemy on the other side, like the people we watched at the State of the Union address, here's the amazing thing, John Jacob. The people sitting at the State of the Union address are senators and representatives. They're the so-called leaders. They're the cream of the crop of parts of this country, and they can't even... they can't even applaud when somebody says we're not going to be a socialist country. And so that's how divided we were. And it was on display. And you can have all the polling. There's a ton of polling that shows a continuing increase in people that think there's going to be a civil war. And by the way, when we talk about a civil war, I know the three of us, you know, on this recording, we know what we're talking about. But I want to be clear. It's not the old North-South blue uniforms, gray uniforms, and it's not, you know, Illinois invading Arizona or something like that.
Right.
It's a massive breakdown of political civility, and it's you know, a city council member who's conservative being killed by some local Antifa group and overreaction. It's all that. It's that dirty civil war that Matt Bracken talks about. It's a horrifying thing. So I think we almost need to find a better term for what we're talking about than civil war, because the outside world, the non-liberty world, they think we're a bunch of lunatics, like we're talking, like we're civil war reenactors or some crazy. They don't even understand the words we're using. But still, that kind of dirty civil war, it's got to be inevitable. I mean, socialists never give up. They never just change their mind.
Right.
And our side, we've been pushed so far, you know. We gave in for years and years and years, and I understand why, and the past is past, but we're down to where the issues are just too important. Are they going to take our guns away? And that's an overreaction. Nope. Have you read
the
proposed legislation in Oregon and Washington and elsewhere? And so we're to our limit, and the other side doesn't back down, and there's no way. This is an irreconcilable difference, as they say.
It is. It's oil and water. They cannot. You know, these people with these coexist stickers. You cannot. These things cannot coexist together in the same place at the same time. They're in conflict with one another. One of them has to give way to the other. And I agree. We need to find another term. It's not so much civil war is almost like too clean of a term. It almost needs to be like internal conflict at the level of fifth generational asymmetrical warfare. I mean, if you could, I know there's multiple syllable words that probably some people may not have be super familiar with, but what we're talking about is the ugliest type of conflict within a country, tearing you apart at your soul level, and people being murdered, you know, like you said, your city councilman or your county commissioner just getting gunned down by somebody who doesn't like his political views because he took a stand against abortion, or, you know, that type of thing that you can't draw clear lines on. Yeah. And the type of warfare that would require to bring order and peace back and stability back would require such a heavy hand that you lose all your liberties in the process of trying to regain control of the chaos. And Shelby, you said, I pray to God you don't go there because it's such an ugly, horrifying thing. And it is. But
I think in our modern times, and even then it's not even that modern, it's over 25 years ago, the closest thing, and I don't even think it's that close, the closest thing that I can imagine that's happened historically is the Bosnian War, where you have an ideological divide with racial components, for sure. You have neighbor fighting neighbor killing neighbor, the councilman getting killed, that sort of thing. And it was just a bloody, awful, awful time. But it's not going to be, but it's not a perfect match in terms of what will happen here. It will be awful. It will be friend killing friend, brother killing brother over. Yeah, it will be sad. It's not something that I want. But I think we're getting it. And I was going to jump in here, but the recent article that just came out of OPB, Oregon Public Broadcasting, I think local NPR group just did an article about how the left in Oregon is creating gun clubs. People are learning how to use firearms that are on the left because they're afraid of, these fascists on the right. And they're arming up and they're training and they are, they're mad. They sound an awful lot like us, except ideologically we're completely different.
Yeah. Well, they're communist revolutionaries, essentially.
Yeah.
I don't know, how else to put it. But, I think that the modern day headlines out of Venezuela are worth taking very close examination of, because there you have essentially two different governments, each declaring the other one to be illegitimate, each declaring themselves to be legitimate, dividing the military's loyalties, dividing the people's loyalties, using food as a weapon, blocking international aid for people that are starving. You've got, people that are sending their children into prostitution so that they can try to, just get some bread so they can survive to the next day. And, it's kind of like an amalgamation of the Bosnian conflict with what we see in Venezuela, what I see, in America. And, Glenn, you brought up a good point that, there are areas in our country that are already socialist. All the Democratic, they're not Democratic, they're Democrat Party candidates. They're almost all from New Europe. I mean, they're Massachusetts and New York and, these heavily occupied leftist fallen areas. They're as far from Americanism as you can get. What's interesting is that they are all coming out of the areas where our nation was birthed. Where you read about all these battles where the founding fathers, won our independence, are now occupied territory. But what I was going to say on that is that although there are leftist areas and there are conservative areas, you don't see anybody crusading to spread capitalism and conservative ideals in the leftist fallen areas. But what you do see are major campaigns where the left is identifying conservative areas and they are going on the attack to bring down any type of vestige of traditional ideals. And trying to replace those with, these human rights Gestapo clubs and things like that to beat down any conservative resistance in conservative held areas. So they're not content any longer to say, okay, you guys are conservative over there. We respect that. That's your culture. We're liberal over here. Respect us. This is our culture. And here's the line. If you want to live like a communist or a leftist globalist, then go to San Francisco or, some other Illinois, or Chicago specifically. But it's no longer the case. They can't accept that you're free over there, that you don't pay as much taxes, that you can own any type of firearm that you have, despite the fact that you have extremely low crime rates and murder rates. They've got to force this agenda on you. You must accept these vaccinations. You must accept this, gun buyback programs. And so they're on the offensive. They're seeking out any kind of light to snuff it out. And so something's going to break at some point. I guess that's my point.
Well, and I think we saw a good example of that in the election, where we have Texas and we have Ted Cruz, who was a solid candidate fighting for his seat. And then we also have Senator John McCain, whose seat got flipped to the D's. All of that. So those states were once, Texas is a red state. Arizona just flipped to blue with losing that seat, and New Mexico is very purple. Those are all border states that are typically conservative. And you're right, New Englanders, New Europeans are coming down, flooding money into those campaigns to flip them. They're taking over conservative real estate because they know if they can catch those Senate seats, they can change things nationally.
Right.
They don't care about the local little school board races. They want those key Senate seats because they can change a lot of policy very quickly that way. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, well, John Jacob, and,
you know, hey, you know what? Let's we're up against a break. Let's take it. Would you guys, can you stick around for the fourth and final segment?
Yeah.
Okay, that'd be great because I know several stuff we want to cover, and I want to talk about these events coming up to help spread the word on that. So just stick around. Thanks for holding over for us longer than we expected. So thanks, guys. Okay, this is John Jacob Schmidt, and we are with the authors Glenn Tate and Shelby Gallagher talking about the state of America, where we're at, maybe where we're headed, and to give you some tools to help you prepare. This is Radio Free Redoubt. Stay right there.
I've never seen a diamond in the flesh. I cut my teeth on wedding rings in the movies.
I've also asked the school board to make a part of every day some kind of anti-violence, anti-gun message.
In the schools, textbooks are rewritten to tell the communist version of
every day,
history.
Every school, at every level. One thing that I think is clear with young people and with adults as well is that we just have to be repetitive about this. It's not enough to simply
to
have
change the meaning of words like religion and duty and democracy. The communists set out to brainwash the people.
Do it every Monday. We need to do this every day of the week and just really brainwash people into thinking about guns in a vastly different way.
Communist propaganda, which left unchallenged, could speed up their goal of world domination. We are in the midst of a continuing struggle for the minds of men.
Welcome back to the fourth and final segment here at the Voice of the American Redoubt. And the fourth segment is brought to you by Werks Holsters, WERKZ.com, Werks.com for your custom Kydex holsters and magazine pouches, and also their line of Liberty State flag or Liberty State seal holsters that part of the proceeds go from each of those sales to help support Liberty State. And we thank all of you guys for supporting Liberty State. And it's exciting to see more flags and more bumper stickers flying in the free zones of Washington State. So that's really exciting too. But we are with authors Glenn Tate and Shelby Gallagher. They're kind enough to hold over to the fourth segment because it feels like this conversation is just starting to get fired up, and we're talking about some pretty deep stuff tonight. And hope you guys are enjoying this and getting something out of this. And it's just something to chew on, you know, during the week. And as Christians, we don't want to live in fear, but we do have legitimate concerns about where our country's going and want to find out what our role should be and within our families, within our communities. And sometimes it's hard. I was talking to some folks that are in session right now in the Washington legislature, and they said that folks are contacting them really feeling disillusioned saying, you know, why can't we get this passed? Why can't we get that passed? And the bottom line is we're just simply outnumbered. There are more on the left that are running with leftist agendas that are hostile toward American traditional values and our heritage, and there's just simply more of them, and they're passing laws. So we'll talk about that. We're going to talk about that, how sharply divided we are in our country and how divided we are becoming in our local communities. Now we've got sheriffs and we've got county commissioners that are drawing the lines, and we're not going to enforce these unconstitutional, unlawful laws. So joining us, or still holding over with us, Glenn and Shelby. Thanks, guys, once again for sticking around in the fourth segment.
Oh, it's our pleasure. Are you kidding me? This is what Shelby and I do for fun.
I know. Like, this is great. This is good stuff. And okay, so you had some thoughts. We had to take a quick break there, but hopefully you're still able to hold on to that thought. As far as the how we're not pushing into the occupied zones to spread freedom. We're kind of holding our own while they are on the attack, coming into our territory, into our backyards, spreading globalism, godlessness, and socialism.
Yeah, and I feel very strongly about this. There's a connection between prepping and people like us who are conservatives who look around and say, oh, my goodness, you know, this country, I used to belong here, and now I don't, or this state or something like that. And you're right. We don't go and evangelize in the you know, non-religious sense. We don't go into Seattle and start debating people about, you know, whether capitalism is a good idea. And I'm okay with that, because I spent a number of my years, as I say, literally staying awake at night trying to think of ways to save Washington from itself.
Right.
You know,
right.
Well, if we pass this bill and we elect these people, and I've completely given up on that. So as far as ideological stuff goes, I think it makes sense for us not to be on offense and go into Seattle or San Francisco and try to reason with them. However, just because you're not on offense doesn't mean you're off the battlefield. And we need to be on defense. And you've raised this point really, really well. The Redoubt has a lot of folks coming to it from other parts of the country, and they bring their politics with them. And that's where you need to focus your political energy, on local elections, on making sure that, and we all make fun of Californians, so I'll just go ahead and do it, the Californians coming to the Redoubt don't bring their California values. I mean, they can have their values, but you just need to, like, outvote them and go and get ready. So there's a role for politics on the defensive side in our own territory.
Right.
But, you know, it hit me this morning that we have, as preppers, a lot of us have given up, and we're gonna hold control over what we can control. I can't control the state of Washington and make them do the right thing, but my property, my household, I can. And the area around me, yes, we certainly can. So we are kind of hunkering down, we meaning conservatives in general, and we're done debating. We're going to take care of our own, and we're going to make sure that those around us are not populating the area with new little socialists. And I think that makes a lot of sense. And so if you're out there and you're saying, gee, shouldn't we be, you know, I don't know, writing articles and handing out pamphlets and telling people that socialism is a bad idea, don't waste your time. But that doesn't mean you don't put any energy in it. Let's defend what we have. Let's defend what's worth defending. And the other side, they're gonna overextend their supply lines politically. They're gonna be trying to do everything, you know, the new stupid gun laws in Washington State, the ones that have passed and the proposed ones. They're gonna overplay their hand. Let them overplay their hand, but don't let them overrun our Redoubt.
Well, I want to share something with you on that note. There is a group, there are several groups, but there's one in particular that has raised its ugly head in the American Redoubt, and it's called Opposing Idaho Extremists. That's the name of this group. And I want to read to you a posting that spawned a hateful, vitriolic, even violent-sounding discussion among leftists. And this is in the heart of the American Redoubts. People, you need to sit up, you need to pay attention. You need to realize that the fight is on, or hopefully there's a fight, which means you're willing to get back and fight for this redoubt that you're moving to escape communism. And this is what they wrote to open up this discussion. Idaho is no stranger to extremism. Here we go. Notice it's as a lifelong Idahoan, I've seen it wreak havoc on several Idaho communities. We are currently experiencing massive population growth and must address the active recruitment of extreme ideologies like the American Redoubt and many others to Idaho. I am personally sick of Idaho being targeted as a location for extremism and hate. No one gets to claim our beautiful state as the ending point of their Redoubt bug out. We have driven out extremism before, and we will do it again. Let's unite around this statewide and get strategic about this fight. So there's definitely discussion now, what they call extremism and hate. And what we're seeing really is the extremism and the hate is from the left. And they're trying to, you know, of course, you know, draw the line between the Aryan Nation compound, which had like three or four people there. You know, they drove those guys out. And so now any conservative right wing leaning movement or ideology or group organization, they immediately try to, you know, align with that. But these guys are going on the offensive in our backyards, in the heart of the American Redoubt, in eastern Washington, in Montana, in Idaho, all across the American Redoubt. There are very few places to retreat to any longer. And they're not content. They're not content with letting you have freedom in your little pocket anymore. They're coming after it. So we can't just check out. We can't. We cannot.
No. No, you can't. Wherever you're at, you can't check out. Now, I give a small pass if you live like, I don't know, New York City, Boston,
yeah.
So that, you know, Chicago, whatever. I give you a small pass because truly, but yeah, we're control what you can control and make sure that all those little local races, all the school on the local level, that is what you can control. Make sure your school board, your city council, your commissioners, your county commissioners, your sheriff, oh my gosh, your sheriff, they all stay conservative and get out their vote on those. Because once those start flipping, and I'm saying it as someone who's seen how those, that becomes a domino effect, and you start losing those seats, pretty soon you can't go back, and you have to, and there's the give up, and there's the, we have to leave now. And hopefully, in that, in your situation, in Idaho and Eastern Washington, you can, that's where I think people like that who write stuff like that, they'll get to the give up point, and then they're going to bug out, let's hope, to someplace wise. San Francisco, Seattle, Portland, where they can be with those that are more like-minded, that they agree with, they're more comfortable with. I think there's a lot of movement back and forth. People are moving right now.
Yes,
that's why
the,
that's why housing markets right now are crazy.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And now, a lot of this grassroots type stuff, it's the little people. You know, we don't like you because you're a communist. We don't like you because you're extremist right-wing hate. And so we're just squabbling down here in the weeds, right, in the grass, like a bunch of little ants. While up at the higher levels, I guess the government levels, let's put it that way, now you're starting to see official advancement at an official level, advancement of socialist policies and ideologies and anti-American agendas coming through our state legislatures and our laws. Mm-hmm. And now we have local sheriffs and county commissioners, boards that are standing up saying, not going to happen here. We're not going to enforce this unconstitutional, unlawful law. So now we're starting to see not just grassroots. This is supposed to, this is actually starting to come up to higher institution levels within our governments. So now you're starting to see headbutting there, which I see as a leap toward when we talk about civil war, you know, internal conflict, where now you're going to start having, I think, an increase of really challenges, like what we saw in Florida, where the governor had mm-hmm. the sheriff who refused to enforce an unconstitutional law, had the governor arrested and removed from office. And now, of course, that sheriff
the sheriff removed.
Right. And then now the sheriff was vindicated later in the court. The court said, this is an unconstitutional law, and the sheriff was in the right. And you are hereby reinstituted into your position. And so at what point are we going to see that where the government's actually going to back the governor? I see that as a strong possibility in Washington State, for example, where you have state attorney general, very hostile toward right ideologies and very supportive of leftist ideologies, where what happens when they do start arresting sheriffs and removing them from office, and the leftist judges are upholding that, backing the governor. That's where I can see conflict. I mean, real conflict emerging from those type of situations. I'm not sure how far off we are from that.
Well, and I see that absolutely with the several sheriffs in Washington State. And by the way, there's quite a few of them in Oregon, too,
yes,
that are on record as refusing to enforce these things. By the way, there are several sheriffs that have not come out on record, as in Washington, for example, but private conversations, it's known that they're not going to enforce it. In other words, they're not going to enforce it. They're just not announcing it.
Right.
But then you're exactly right. That is where you're going to have, I guess, force on force, for lack of a better term. You're going to have a sheriff arresting a state or federal law enforcement party that is trying to, enforce something. I mean, in Washington State, maybe the governor tells the state patrol, and this is speculation. This hasn't happened. I want to rumor monger.
All hypothetical.
Maybe the governor, tells the state patrol to go and get some guns that violate Initiative 1639, and the local sheriff finds out about it because the troopers I know, by the way, are all pretty patriotic guys, and they would probably leak it to the sheriff. And then the sheriff says, sorry, fellas, you're not coming into my county. And then what happens? And then you've got people that have to pick sides. People have to say, well, the governor's right, the state patrol's right. And then other people say, no, they're not, the sheriff's right. And now you've got kind of people aligning with the sheriff and people aligning with the larger government.
And then you've got the governor calling out the National Guard because now he has a security situation on his hand. And then things, potentially escalating from there. I mean, this, you write a story about that.
But, exactly. And you've got with the sheriff, then you've got the sheriff in this scenario calling out a posse, which is a real thing. It's a legitimate thing. There's a statute in Washington that allows this.
Yeah.
And now you've got a posse of folks like us listening to this show that are now going to have to resist the state authorities. And by the way, if the Democrats win in 2020, it'll probably be federal authorities.
Right.
And you've got a mess on your hands. And not only do you have a mess on your hands where you've got two armed groups facing off, which is bad news in and of itself, I'm thinking about it politically. You've got the general population. They can choose two seemingly legitimate sides, and they have to make a choice. And when there are two seemingly legitimate sides and people are making a choice and there's violence going on, that's a civil war.
Yeah. Yeah. And when they can't resolve it in any other way, they feel like force and violence is the only way, their only option left. And then, of course, we also have some sheriffs also speaking up saying they are going to enforce the law. And they're waiting for the judge until the judge tells them it's unconstitutional, and then they'll stop. So when you got a sheriff or two drawing the line, and then the next sheriff over in the next county or the next two adjacent counties are saying, no, this needs to be, we need to uphold this law. It's a state law, and it's not our place to determine what's constitutional. It's the courts to decide. And so then there's some major chasms in between the mindset, the mentality of even amongst the sheriffs. There's no unifying until something like this is this something like this what we're talking about would force that it would force people to take a side, really. Which side of this issue you're going to be on and start drawing
lines. And another thing that scenario would do is it forces people and we're talking about the general population here, people in the general population for the first time to think, when guns are legal in one county and they're not in another, and if you want to drive through that bad county, you have to either, you know, leave your guns at home or hope you don't get pulled over. That'll be the first time a lot of people think, this is not one big state. This is not Washington State anymore. This is X county and Y county. And then it's going to hit them that there isn't some overarching political order.
Right.
And, you know, symmetry and tradition and all of that, it really is kind of county on county stuff. And that's when people start thinking, well, if there's really no state of Washington or Oregon or whatever it might be, because it's county by county, then, you know, that state tax I pay, well, I should just kind of like quit paying that, because there really is no state of Oregon. I'm not going to do that. And then it just breaks down. People quit following a variety of rules when they realize they're not in one big happy family. And they ought to realize that pretty quick, because we're not in one big happy family.
Yeah, and we're strong proponents of people arming themselves, training, being prepared, preparing their families. You never know when your local sheriff might say, appeal to his people in his county and say, I need help. We're in trouble, and I need help. Anybody who can come, I need you. And we need to be ready for that. Those type of lines are being drawn, you know, so... but hey, we've got some events coming up. One in particular I want to talk about to help people become more self-reliant and prepared, whether it's a winter storm like we're seeing all over the Northwest right now. As we speak, it's hitting everywhere. A situation where we have a, you know, a social, economic, political type of meltdown. Supplies, logistics are disrupted, and you got to be self-reliant. There's some training coming up. Of course, we all already know about the Northwest Preparedness Expo in Central Washington, but a couple weeks before that, this is really cool because this hardly ever happens in occupied territory. There's a lot of patriots on the Olympic Peninsula and in Western Washington who need something to go to. So let's talk about this. Talk about the event. We'll make the announcement there.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to jump in here. First of all, let me give you the deets here. It's the Puget Sound Preparedness Expo, Saturday, March 30th, from 9 to 5 at the Baymont Inn and Suites in Bremerton. And I want to thank all of you who are listening who are in Eastern Washington, Idaho. The organizers of this event were inspired by those events that happened on the East Side and said, we need that here. We have patriots here.
Yes.
We would love to have something here. And they were inspired by those folks. And there are some patriots. Not very many in Seattle and Olympia. I get it. But on the outskirts of that, there's a lot of preppers, liberty-minded folks, and some great resources. So we're going to be there, Glenn, Kate, and I. A recent guest we had on our podcast, Jeff Reynolds, who wrote the book Behind the Iron Curtain, The Funders Behind the Left. And we'll be there. He has a booth there. There's going to be a lot of great vendors.
Jeff
there.
Reynolds?
I know you're going to be there.
You kind of.
Jeff Reynolds, yes.
Okay, Jeff Reynolds, and he's the author. You went garbled a little a bit there. So that
sure.
was behind the. What was it? Behind the Iron. Say that again, the name of the
behind
book.
Behind the Iron Curtain.
Okay.
His book will be coming out here in a few weeks, and he'll be there having a booth at the expo. Behind the Curtain, excuse me.
Perfect. Okay, perfect, perfect. Now, the website for this, there is not an actual website for this event, correct? It's only Facebook. Does that sound right?
Correct.
Okay. And that is, so at Facebook, you go to the Puget Sound Preparedness Expo, March 30th. Saturday. That's a Saturday. It's going to go from 9 to 5 in Bremerton, Washington. Now, at RadioFreeRedoubt.com, we also have a posting with the flyer for this. So if you don't do Facebook, I get it. You still got all the information you need to be able to make it to the event. And it's posted right there. But if you do have Facebook, then go to Puget Sound Preparedness Expo. And there's everything you need to know. And help spread the word. Yes, and thank you for the invitation to speak there. I think, am I scheduled to speak two presentations?
Yes, you can talk all you want. So I don't know if it's two or three or whatever. You just talk all you want. I mean, okay. It's good. Okay. It's fine.
Yeah, we'll have preparedness gear there, communications gear specifically, talking about AMRON, the American Redoubt Radio Operators Network, and training. We'll have equipment there to help get you started if you're just starting out. So we're looking forward to that. And, of course, always great opportunity to meet you guys and shake your hands and see you again. So,
Matt Shea also will be there and represent Matt Shea.
Oh, yeah.
And he'll be talking about the Liberty State, and that'll be fantastic. So if you're on the west side, and you always, all the east side in Idaho, they always have all the cool things going on, and you say, geez, I wish we had something cool going on this side of the mountains. Well, there will be, and this is your chance to meet JJS and to meet represent Matt Shea, and if you want to, meet me and Shelby, and that would be great. And there's going to be a lot of other people there, too.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, it's weird. There's about 5 million people in the Seattle metro area.
Wow.
And there's, to our knowledge, never been a prepper expo. And that just needs to end. So we decided to put an end to that and start hopefully galvanizing preppers on this side of, patriots, really, on this side of the mountains.
Sure.
And there's something about walking in a room with a couple hundred people and saying to yourself, oh, my goodness, I'm not alone. I am not alone.
Yep.
And that's really, really important.
That is.
And you'll get that when you come to the expo in Bremerton.
That's huge. Awesome. Thank you so much. All right. Well, it's been a pleasure once again to have both of you guys on at the same time, Glenn Tate and Shelby Gallagher. I want to thank you guys so much. God bless you for the work that you're doing and spreading the word and educating people and just really bringing it. This is a dark subject, but you always have a way of putting an upbeat spin on it and saying, hey, everything's going to be all right. Let's just take it seriously, but let's not take ourselves too seriously. And let's just rise to the occasion and get through this together. And building that community.
Exactly.
It's just really cool. So thank you guys so much. God bless you, and look forward to seeing you on March 30th.
Sounds good.
See you in Bremerton.
Okay. Take care now. All right, guys. I hope you enjoyed that. That was went a little bit longer than we expected, but I thought it was just a great conversation, and I hope you're blessed by that. I hope you guys have a blessed week. Thank you so much for your prayers, your support, your letters of encouragement, and your financial support. All of it just means so much. So with that, I will bid farewell. This is John Jacob Schmidt, and you've been listening to the Voice of the American Redoubt. Good night.